Welcome back to It Starts With You podcast with me, Mark Hopkins. And what better way to start a second series of podcasts? And hopefully between here and Christmas, I'll get to speak to a lot of people similar to this first guest of the second series, but Paul Ryder from Mind Islands. And the guy has just blown my mind on a lot of stuff, if I'm honest with you. We got chatting off the back of me posting that and giving up caffeine, and I generally have given up caffeine and looked at a couple of studies of what caffeine does to you, and realized that, you know, for ages I thought there was something wrong with me, but it turns out I'm just drinking too much bloody coffee. And Paul and I were talking about it, and I thought, I need to get this guy on a podcast. What he has, what the knowledge he has, and what he does for a living is extraordinary. So here it is. Myself and Paul. Hello, Paul. How are you?
Hello, Mark. How are you? You all right?
Yeah. I'm so excited to speak to you.
Thank you for having me on the show. It's I only hope that this information can help the listeners as well.
Yeah. should we tell everyone a little bit about yourself. Who are you? What do you do? Where do you come from?
My mother.
Star sign. Everything. Yeah. Let's
Gemini.
Go. Yeah. Oh, I'm a Gemini.
Yeah. Summer children.
Yeah.
Okay, so my name's Paul Ryder. I grew up in a small town in the north of England called Preston. And I had a very I was going to say unique life, but it wasn't, because I know a lot of people walk my own journey as well. Currently at this moment in time, I'm an emotional intelligence trainer and communications specialist. So I help people basically understand themselves and what's going on in their mind, and about limiting beliefs and fears and anxieties and self-doubt because of the experiences that we've had with other people, usually families and children at school or interactions we've had. So we get, ideally we would have this beautiful world where everything's wonderful and everybody gets on, but that's not the case. You know, when people say, oh, I've got a dysfunctional family, like everybody in some way has got a dysfunctional family. So what happens as we grow, we get this distorted view of reality based on the confused interactions of the people that we've met in our lives. And sometimes it's easy to feel angry and rage at those people because they didn't do what we wanted them to do, but they were just struggling, you know. And I had to work through a lot of my own stuff and gone back in time. I was carted off to hospital for a 7-month hip operation when I was 3 years old, because I had hip dysplasia, so that's quite traumatic. Yeah. And then I had an alcoholic father, which was a barrel of laughs. So I've seen very, alcohol's a strange thing, and it's different for different people. I work a lot on this with alcohol abuse, but it can turn a person into very extremes of emotions all the time. So some parts I thought my dad absolutely adores me, and then sometimes I literally thought he's going to kill me, not sort of beat me up, he's going to end my life. Now, not as an adult, he wouldn't have done, but I was terrified. And then I got bullied at school because my self-esteem went down. And by the time I was 17, I was full of rage, hatred. I hated myself. I despised who I was, and I was suicidal. And fortunately, I didn't go through with it, but I lived a lot of pain. Then I went into the personal development world, you know, the pop psychology stuff, where it's like, oh, just think positive and everything's going to be fine. And I spent pretty much my dad's inheritance on that, and I got nowhere at all, you know, which is kind of why I became obsessed about learning this stuff, because I couldn't understand how I was seeing therapist after therapist after therapist, and I was getting nowhere after spending £10,000, and that's in 1990. And so I started going really down the deep, dark route, like Carl Jung and Freud and the philosophies, and that's where the key is. It's all about making the unconscious conscious. So the personal development, and we can get into this further on, but a lot of the personal development world unfortunately relies on covering up your inner fears. So if you feel self-doubt, you just think, yeah, oh, I'm a good person, and that does not work. And after you know, they set about achieving goals. So then I ran health clubs for 15 years and I became a fitness manager and a personal trainer and all these cool titles. And no matter how much I achieved, no matter how much money I made, no matter how much power I got, no matter how much I could control people, no matter how fit I got, you know, at one point I had like a 25-inch waist and a 41-inch chest. So people were accusing me of using steroids, but I had to become the best at everything. I was obsessed. And I remember just sat by this reservoir one day when I was about 25, 26, and I felt so worthless. And I became so despondent of, I've tried so hard what all these people have told me to do, yet why am I failing so badly? Why do I feel so empty inside?
Yeah.
And that's when, you know, a lot of people I work with one-to-one now, they've been down that route and it's not worked for them. And it doesn't, because we've got to go inside. You know, if we get a computer virus and we try to change what's showing on the screen by drawing a marker pen on the screen, it's not going to change the virus. You've got to go into the computer, update the virus, and then the screen will show you something. Does that analogy make sense?
Yeah, that does. It does. Yeah. You're virtually influencing zero.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
Yeah. So basically, when anybody asks me, does this stuff work, that I teach anyway, and all I teach is what I've learned from other amazing trainers, you know, so nothing's ever new. But when they say, does it work, I say, well, you know, I'm a walking testimonial of this. I was suicidal through all of these things. And now when I think of my father, you know, I just feel gratitude for this, not for what he did, because what he did was wrong, but he was struggling. But I feel gratitude for the experience, for gratitude for the experience of the bullying. I feel, because it's taught me to be strong, and not in a, I'm more powerful than anybody else, but literally at a strength inside. And a love, if that doesn't sound too sort of wishy-washy, but a love for the world, the love for the people when they look in the mirror. You know, I love Paul, and it's a wonderful feeling. And it's something that has been more profound than anything I've ever achieved, no matter how much money I've made, no matter how much physical fitness I've ever had, and the sense of connection to other people and forgiveness is by far the most profound. So, yeah, I'm slightly obsessed about teaching this stuff, because it's just amazing when I hear other people sharing this and grow from it as well.
It's extraordinary, because we connected through a comment of me just giving up coffee, and it's just snowballed from there. And we're almost like a mini support group. I never to drink coffee. but you, I can see that come from you. I can see instantly you like hearing people's, even little things like giving up coffee, but you like hearing those stories of people's self-realization and that removing that unconscious bias and making it conscious and trying to do something about it rather than be a victim of it. This is how we started our conversation yesterday on the phone about victims and bullies and how you deal with conflict management in this kind of area. And you said something quite profound to me, which I didn't ever realize, is that their psychology is very similar between bullies. So tell us a little bit about that. So it wasn't, because I used to believe that victims were just someone which suffered from bullies, but there's a psychology behind it.
Yeah, just once in my mind, I wanted to just share something there about the, when talking about, you know, coffee and people.
Yeah, go for it. That's cool.
Like the philosophy of Mind Islands was something that came to me about 20 years ago, and it's the logo is like the yin yang symbol separated. Yeah. What it is that, kind of leading into victim and bully, is that on island one, it's the victim mindset, which is, I can't do it, nothing's ever going to work out. Basically where you're overrun with your thoughts, and it's to understand that sometimes people do play the victim to get attention from other people, but sometimes people just don't know, you know, they're struggling and they've no idea at all that they're in that state, and they just think that the world's really hard life. So on island one, everything is about struggle and fight and fear and anxiety, and this is obviously not a nice place to be. Yeah. And island two is where everybody takes responsibility, or they'll, you know, they might be in a really bad place, but maybe physiologically or like emotionally, financially, yeah, but they go, I'm going to find a way. Or they're actually successful in whatever they're doing, you know, and it's that, it always comes down to the attitude. And in relation to the victim and bully, it's something that I called Never the Twain Shall Meet. I remember the first time I ever shared this, it was to a room full of school teachers, which it turned around eventually, but it didn't go down well at the start. And I basically said the victim starts the bullying process. And the room just turned on me.
Wow, it's profound to say, though, isn't it?
Okay. But again, I use my, you know, I would never share something that I've never walked. And what happens is that no human being loves rejection. I'll reword that. Like, no one likes rejection. Nobody likes to be turned away from it. It makes people feel uncomfortable. Social isolation.
My whole world improvement is rejection, by the way. I just like to say that. Yeah. 95% rejection. But no, it's right. It's true. It's true. It's hard. It's horrible. You feel you've been beaten up every day if you
get it. Yeah. And it's with the sort of victim mentality, it's the, you know, I mean, and saying this as well, I mean, it's like when I was saying, oh, you know, my dad was an alcoholic and I got bullied. And then I met somebody who had a harder life than me, and he turned it around. You know, and I've worked with people who've been sexually abused. I mean, I won't go into too much detail on that because it's obviously very sensitive. But who have just said, like, right, that happened to me, but I'm going to find a way forward. Other people can have... you know, I didn't get enough pocket money when I was a kid, so my parents have let me down, and there's much more to it, obviously, than that. But it's all how we see the situations. Now, victim mentality the victim mentality says, I want other people to live up to my expectations, and they don't, and I don't accept that, so I blame them for my pain. Rather than going, you know, I wanted my dad to, you know, play with me. Well, he did at times, but I didn't want that to feel like my dad was going to kill me. I didn't want my dad to die when I was 14. I didn't want to see burn holes in the carpet. But that happens, and that's life. That's the situation. I mean, it took me a while to understand how to come to terms with it. And when you're pulling this stuff out of people, it can be very, very painful and require very gentle steps, because just to say it up front like that can be immensely overwhelming for people. But yeah, back to your question, like the victim mentality will, it's kind of, it all comes down to boundaries. So the victim mentality is the poor me, everything's really hard. And what they'll do is they'll kind of avert the gaze, they'll drop down, they'll take a meek posture. And nobody likes neediness. And nobody likes that victim mentality. So you've got the fight or flight reaction, which is what happens when we go into a fear state. Yeah. So the fight action will be if you're getting angry, if you're getting rageful, if you want to attack people. So that's a very moving forward energy. But then you've got the flight one, which is the passive aggressive, the avoidance, the shyness. Now, if someone's shy, you know, as I was as well, that's still a victim mentality. It's pulling away. So what happens is the victim will pull away and feel overwhelmed. And I'll just take back to that word shy, because again, some people feel that way and they don't know how to stop that feeling from happening. And I know when I used to get a mouthful of Tourette's. So if I was in a group of people and I was eating food, I'd choke on food. And, you know, the last thing I needed on my plate was someone to say, oh, by the way, you've been a victim. I was just like, I was struggling for it, just trying to get by, which we all are. But when a person drops their boundaries and feels overwhelmed, what happens is the bully that can't stop their over, you know, they just don't know how to stop, they'll overbear other people with weak boundaries. So bullies never bully people who've got very strong boundaries because it's too complicated for them.
Yeah.
So you've got one person in flight mode, the victim mindset, which is, I can't defend myself, I'm too weak, I can't put my boundaries because I can't defend myself because I'm not good enough. And you've got the fight side of the, which expresses itself as a bully, that goes, well, I'm going to stomp all over everything because I don't know how to stop. So it's about boundaries. That's all it comes down to. The bully needs to know where the boundaries are, and the victim mindset needs to understand that they need to strengthen the boundaries. Yeah. Again, when I was suicidal, using that as an example, and somebody said, come on, you know, stand up for yourself and yeah, like get your boundaries. I was like, well, I can't. You know, it wasn't me being negative. It was just like, I can't do that.
Yeah.
And I'm not suicidal because I'm having a bad day. I just don't know what to do. So if anybody listening is feeling in that mindset where they're getting overwhelmed and struggling, it's like, if you don't know what's happening, then that's fine. But we can work on finding a way to strengthen those boundaries. It's all about education.
That's it. That's it. That can reverse as well, can't it? A victim can become a bully, and a bully can become a victim, can't it?
Oh, God, yeah.
Yeah.
And to be fair, it's like, I mean, when we were talking the other day, to share, it's like I was a victim at first, you know, and I used to literally run to my mum at all times. I'd burst into tears if people start hitting me and spitting at me and stuff like that in the schoolyard, which obviously doesn't go down very well. But then I suppressed all my anger and passive aggressive. And after studying a bit of psychology, and I'm not ashamed to share this, it's just the path that I walked. I'm quite grateful for the experience as well. But I became a bully, and quite a vicious one. So I would play the victim too. So, you know, putting in my dad and the bullying. And then when that person would then start to go, God, that must be really hard, I'd say, well, what have you experienced? And then they'd share their tragedies in life or that we've all had. Yeah. And I'd be like, that's really, and I'd start to use it against them to gain control over them. So I was a nasty person.
It's a hell of a reaction, isn't it? It's a hell of a control mechanism that you try to then control other people around you.
Yeah. And it was all because he was terrified. You know, I was so scared, which is still a victim. You know, all bullies are victims. Bullies are victims. Yeah. They're just trying to cope.
And this is why I like, I know we had touched upon NLP. This is why I like the saying in NLP is that people do things because it's for the good in some respect. So that you doing that, you were trying to make yourself feel better. That's the good.
Safe.
To look for. Yeah. Even murderers do things for good intentions. You know what I mean? It's everything we do is for good intentions, for bad intentions. Which is a concept that I had to get my head around. It took me years, by the way, to get my head around that. And once you work that part out, especially with bullies and with victims, which is pretty simple, they're trying to protect themselves or they're trying to make themselves good, or convince themselves they're better.
Yeah. It's all like Maslow's hierarchy of needs. You know, yes. We've got food and water, and then the second one is we just need to feel safe, we need to feel secure.
Yeah.
And it's all about love as well. You know, we want love and connection and security. We just all want to feel safe. But it's like I meet a lot of people who, especially when we're working through tears, will very often come. And tears are a beautiful thing that the human body is wired into us. And pretty much everybody that I ever see that cries will say sorry. Sorry for crying, you know, sorry for being me. And that's the thing, because if they've experienced a world where they've been put down for being vulnerable, and just then a note to that, if anybody listening hasn't listened to Brené Brown, she's wonderful. Absolutely wonderful.
I've not listened to her. I'm right there.
Have you not heard Brené Brown?
No.
Oh, she's amazing. And Oprah Winfrey as well. It's just like absolutely wonderful, very powerful woman. They talk about vulnerability and connection. Oh, okay. So, yeah. There's a YouTube video of the difference between empathy and sympathy, which is just so profound.
I think a lot of my kind of self-realization and a lot of where I get it from has been from NLP. I really enjoyed it when I did it.
Yeah.
And I continue doing it afterwards, which it's great to a point, but you've it's like religion. It's going to let it into your life. You've got to accept it because there's a lot of visualization. There's a lot of right wing, left wing, whatever you want to call it, out there, bloody space thinking that you've got to do with it. But but that's about the part of the process to make yourself then start to believe better and understand things better. But also TED Talks as well, and listening to some of these guys. There was a really good one. It's gone out of my head now. It was a guy that was talking about his, I think it was his sister, and it's going to come to me who the guy is. Fantastic psychologist, and his sister jumped off the bed and broke her arm, and he somehow convinced her with the power of convincing not to cry. And he started realizing that there's a mindset, a power that you have over people that you can use for bad or you can use for good. It was quite an interesting kind of direction. How did the teachers, by the way, in this room that turned on you, took all this information, did they start realizing something about kind of the children that they were working with, or was there any kind of feedback or any kind of realization from them?
Yeah, well, I got a standing ovation at the end after an hour, which was nice. And it was, and what was really good was that they were very, very against everything I was saying when I opened with that line. And when I teach, I like to condense things down quite to get things a message across really quick. So I use quite intense experiences. Even though I'm very at peace with what happened to me, you know, it's like I still use it because it very often goes, people, wow, you know, that's quite intense. But what was really amazing was the teachers at first, they were like, no, you're totally wrong. And then by the end, they were like, wow, after reflecting on this, we have realized, and not me telling them how they should think, which is definitely not what I ever want to have happen. But they said, actually, we've put this through our mindset, and actually, yeah, we get it. And it's about helping the people who are struggling in the victim mindset. And I got a member years ago, there was, I can't remember which radio station it was, I got a call first thing in the morning, like, of this guy on a radio station. So, look, somebody's cancelled, you're a coach, can you, like, help us out with? And they didn't even tell me what they were going to say. It was about 5 minutes, and it's something to do with school. I said, well, yeah, it's cool, I'll take a call. And I was thrown this question of, these kids made a yearbook of all the children in the year, and the coolest kids with the best dress sense, all the way down to the scruffiest kid or the ugliest kid or whatever like that. So it's pretty brutal what they were doing, you know, and it was like sort of proper hierarchical. Yeah, and
well, actually, when you think about it.
It's never nice to experience it.
No, it's, yeah.
But the presenter was trying to angle me to something of what he expected me to say, but I was like, no. He was saying, like, what things would you put in place to stop this from happening? And I said, well, kids are kids. You know, this is the expression of people's lives. And this is what's said to a child. So whether it's said through a yearbook, or it's said passively aggressively, or it's said in the playground when they're not there, or it's said in the workplace, or it's said behind your back, as an adult, it's still being said. So we could take all these rules and regulations to, and I think the world's getting a bit ridiculous with it now. It's like, you can't do this and you can't do that, you can't say this and this is wrong.
Yeah.
And I think what we're doing is starting to overcompensate for people's insecurities rather than saying, look, you've got to stand on your own two feet. It's there's a stage to it. I mean, like, you can't just like push everyone around and say, stand up yourself.
No.
There's got to be a compromise, but it's at the end of it.
Yeah, it's got to be. I was going to say, there's got to be for the people which feel insecure, there's got to be checks and balances they're going to have in mind in order. Like that person just said something horrible about my shirt. Do I go mental at them, or do I cry, or do I just accept the fact he just doesn't like my shirt? You know, I mean, there is some things are really insultative, like racism is quite insultative, but then some things are like. You know, just get a grip a little bit on that subject, and I know it's a horrible word to say, get a grip, but you know what I mean. But that's an internal monologue you need to have with yourself, isn't it? Do I get insulted by the fact that it doesn't like my shirt? You know, it's a strange one, isn't it?
It's like a lot of stuff I do is that I've got. The teachings are there's three areas of the brain or the mind. So you've got your conscious mind, which sees the world today. You've got your subconscious mind, which processes everything in the background. And you've got what's called Pandora's box. Now, Pandora's box is where if we have an experience which we class as traumatic, and that doesn't have to be you're beaten up and thrown in a cellar. It could be that you didn't get an ice cream from your dad, or your mum didn't give you pocket money or something like that, or you were withheld love, for example, which is very passive aggressive, but you can't necessarily articulate. And then what happens is we store that down in the mind of the Pandora's box era. And we can't process it because we've never been taught how to. And what happens, so if, for example, it was like you've got a belief in there saying people let me down because, say, parents let me down, and the mind will generalize itself, people let me down. And then if you've got a follow-up belief, people let me down and I don't know what to do about it, or people insult me when you say that shirt actually being my other. People insult me and attack me and I can't defend myself. So say, for example, if you got that from a parent or a sibling or whatever, if you've got that as a belief, it'll look for the solution of how to deal with it. So if when you were a kid you got attacked, you didn't know how to deal with it, and then your only option was to run to mom or dad and get them to protect you, then as an adult, and you see this, it's rife in workplaces and in marriages and relationships, you might get insulted, then drop the head, go into victim state, and then passively aggressively blame that person, and not being aware of their own skills and abilities that they can actually defend themselves. They go into that old mindset, that re-loop, and then run to the boss, run to HR, run to their mom because their husband and wife were rude to them. So what they do is they relive that loop. And when I'm working through one-to-one, I'll trigger certain experiences on purpose to see the reactions. And you can see somebody, they'll go, but. And their voice will go, hi. And it's like they're talking as a child, they talk. So the re-triggering the loop that's in Pandora's box, and that's why like NLP is amazing, but obviously it's part of a whole plethora of different like I said, depth psychology is one aspect, transaction analysis is another, and there's all these different aspects, and I think all of them coming together will form a whole solution, really.
Is there anything people can do on their own right now that they, if they're kind of thinking, I think I'm going through some of this psychology at the moment where I believe I'm the victim, but I don't know how to deal with it. Is there anything practical steps someone can do on their own right now?
There is actually. If to get a piece of paper and draw two columns. And the first column is who you actually are right now. So what job you've got, if you're working, do you have friends? What kind of situation are you at in life? Now, sometimes people can look at that and go, no, I'm not really successful. But forget the emotional reactions of that. It's like, but you're alive. You've got somewhere to live.
Yeah.
So that's the actual true self, as it were, the reality. And then the second column is what's called the residual self-image. Now, the residual self-image is what we believe we are, but not necessarily true. So, for example, when I was working on my own stuff, you know, I was running a health club, I was seen as very successful in life. But when I wrote down the residual self-image, I'm a worthless little boy. People do not respect me. I cannot defend myself. I'm better off dead because I'm just a waste of space in this world. It's like, for me, it was like, I'm not even a spare part. I'm just nothing at all. So that contrasted very differently from the true self. And so when you put it on paper, you can see the lies that your mind are telling you. You know, the amount of people that say, I'm worthless. It's like, we'll prove that.
Yeah.
There was one lady once I was working with, and she went, no men fancy me. And I was like, well, and I was in Manchester at the time. I said, I'll bet you £1,000. And I would have gone through with it. We walk down the main street in Manchester, and I'll go up to every single guy we meet, yeah, and I'll say, do you find this lady sexually, well, not sexually, it'd be a bit upfront, but do you find this lady attractive? And she went, no, we can't do that. I said, why? And we dug down into it, and she went, okay, right. Men would find me attractive, but I'm scared of getting rejected. So her residual self-image then became a protection program. So she was like, oh, you know, men don't like me because. It's like, no, you're afraid of getting hurt. Then that will come under the residual self-image. People will reject me. That's the residual self-image part. So when you start to see your residual self-image and your true self as separate, then you can say, actually, my mind is lying to me.
Yeah.
And that's the first stage, to see the lies that your mind's creating.
It does that. It does that through just evolution, isn't it? Through the years of protecting itself, isn't it? It's
convincing
you that you're fine. Don't worry. You're fine. And that is bad, isn't it?
That's
bad to yourself. Very unhealthy. It's like eating chocolate. Yeah. It's fine. Yeah. I'll stop tomorrow.
tomorrow. Yeah. It's interesting me talking about coffee, because I was talking to a client last night, and he was just saying, like, he's terrified of giving up caffeine, and, you know, and it's an addiction, you know. People say, no, I'm fat. That phrase, it's full of antioxidants. Well, I know, like, a nutritional, he goes into, like the structures of food, and he's like, I don't fully know what antioxidants are. I know kind of what they do, but you know, people chuck around these words to try and justify what they're doing to stay safe, you know. That extra cup of coffee disconnects you from your emotions, really.
I say I love disproving myths about things, and one of the using the coffee as one of the things, I kept convincing myself that they needed coffee in the morning to be awake. So I said to myself, okay, then let's try one day without coffee, see what happens.
Yeah.
Within 24 hours, I was a completely, I know it sounds crazy, I was drinking 5-6 cups of coffee a day. To some people, that doesn't sound a lot, but I'm talking about the 500 milligram, you know, latte cups of coffee.
Wow.
Two spoons of like Dour Egberts were going in that bad boy. But it was.
Did you ever sleep?
I didn't know, that stopped by 12, 1 o'clock in the day, because I'll start work about 8-ish, and about 12, 1 o'clock, I'd stop drinking coffee. And then, and this is another one of my vices that I've stopped as well, which I haven't mentioned to you, is then I flip to like a soft drink, like Coke or something, do you know what I mean? Something that is still caffeinated, but I'm
sugar.
And sugars. Well, it's actually the Pepsi Max and stuff like that I tend to drink, but it's still bad for you.
Yeah, and your teeth.
And your teeth, yeah, 100%. And I was like, well, I need to stop doing that. And I've actually stopped drinking Pepsi completely now, and it's been about 3 days that I've actually come away from it. What triggered it was I had a couple of podcasts about ADHD, and I was like reflecting in myself, thinking, I can't concentrate, something's not right with me. I'm all over the place. I'm not focusing on one task. I'm arcing back and forth between tasks. There's something wrong with me, then I've got ADHD. that's the victim mentality. Something's not right with me. It's me. It's my problem. And I did a test. All right, it's not ADHD. I'm very low on the scale. It's not ADHD. Then there must be something else. That process of realizing it's a drink that was causing me, excessive amounts of a drink that was causing this problem, it was like a weight off my shoulders. And when it, like I say, within 24 hours, my focus changed. I was able to do tasks to completion from beginning to end, rather than kind of, I don't know what the word is. I would start it, know I need to do it. Oh, there's something shiny over here I need to do now. Do you know what I mean? And now I'm sitting here in my office, and I actually have lists of things to do in chronological order, and I'm doing them now.
Yeah.
Like, 3 weeks ago, I couldn't do them. No way could I do them. And it was all because of a liquid.
Yeah. I was going to say, it's very interesting as well how you say, like, about, there must be I've got ADHD, and the mind's got something called cognitive dissonance, which will always prove its beliefs right. So if, say, for example, you had a belief, or people have beliefs, which I can't do things, I'm too weak, I'm not good enough, that's the residual self-image, what it will do is it will create a world where we prove that. So for me, when I was like feeling, people always push me around, well, I go and socialize in like deadbeat bars where they're very aggressive people. And lo and behold, they would get pushed around. And also, if it's like, how many people say I'm always tired? Well, if you're smashing coffee all day long, your brains get can go into this another time, but like I recommend anybody listening looking to how your brain reacts on coffee and how the caffeine mimics adenosine, and it's ridiculously powerful. It's a drug. Caffeine is a drug. It's there as same sugar, I think, is nature's antidepressant. But if we're smashing it all day long, then your brain's adapting to it, and then when you really need it.
When you take too much of something, your body it's antibiotics. You take too much antibiotics, you can't use it anymore. And that's why I posted that on LinkedIn about giving up coffee, and I used the spider web. It's a real NASA study, by the way. People were like, "What, NASA studying?"
The spider web, powerful, isn't it?
It was caffeine, people, spiders on LSD, they were focused. But they kind of got near the end, and then they just, I think they fell asleep or just died of exhaustion or something like that.
So looking at graphs.
Yeah. And then you had the ones which were on weed, and they kind of, and then they just went back to sleep. But the coffee one, they were still capable of spinning a web, but they were not focused on spinning a web. And that spider web was a representation of me, capable of doing things, but just not focused enough to get things done. And it's amazing. It's just one thing I've changed. All I've changed is one thing in my life, and it's made a massive impact to my mindset. And that one, I find it fascinating. Do you think? I've mentioned this in a previous podcast with a lady called Kira, who's very similar to yourself, and she does a lot more NLP and kind of understanding mindset. I mentioned it to her, is it kind of a Dunning-Kruger kind of effect that we believe we have enough information, but we really don't have enough information at all, and we're kind of stuck in this tiny little circle of our mind? Is that what the effect is, or is that something else?
Yeah, I think for me, I can only kind of relate it to belief structures. So if we believe that we are going to fail in some way, we will find a way to prove that, right? So it could be that we stop reading a book, or, and again, like the victim mindset, it will very often be like, I can't do it, I'm not good enough, people don't follow me, people don't respect me. That's a lot of things trapped inside people's mindset. So say, for example, it's there's a loop of self-fulfilling prophecy. So if a guy walks into a networking event and he's got a belief that people do not like me and do not want to talk to me because I'm blah, 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 then he'll walk in and either gravitate to the more aggressive people that are a bit more aloof or a bit rude.
Yes.
Because then he'll get his needs, his expectations met. Or he'll walk up to really friendly people and he'll have his head down, he won't really say much, and then he might act uncomfortable, which then triggers other people to feel uncomfortable. And they pull away from him, and then he goes out going, nobody wants to talk to me, see I'm right. And that's cognitive dissonance. They always prove themselves right.
You know, that's funny. That's really strange, because I've been in networking events, and if you go in there going, oh God, like that, that guy instantly comes to you. That overbearing.
Yeah.
My name's John. And you're like,
oh, here's my business card.
Yeah. And you're like, whoa, okay, John. Oh, calm it down, mate.
Yeah.
I'm going to go for the coffee. that's interesting. I guess dealing with those people, because if you're that self-aware person, then you're going to deal with them completely different, rather than kind of go, oh God, it's John again, and then kind of scurry away. It's kind of like you kind of go at them, don't you, in the same way they've come at you. Is that right? Is that the right psychology to deal with that?
Yeah, so like, for example, you know, if people go in there going like, oh, you know, people are overbearing, and this John comes up to you and he's like, well, overbearing, it's like, we can act in one or two ways. If we're self-aware, we can go, okay, I understand his energy isn't quite right for me, and then I'll move away. Or negotiate it around if you see potential in that person as
Got
to
you.
When they calm down, they're fine. But a lot of people, if they are overwhelmed by that situation, will just pull away or walk away going, oh, that's a dick. There was just something actually I wanted to mention with the caffeine.
Yeah, go on, go for it.
Which is very, very, very powerful, is that something I tested a while ago, and it's back to that victim mindset and walking and networking about as well, is we've got two energy states of our body. We've got parasympathetic, which is that we're very calm and relaxed and in a natural, healthy state of awareness. Then we've got sympathetic state, which just means we're on guard and everything's dangerous, so we're on full alert.
Yeah.
But we're using a lot more energy, like another way of saying I'm in a stressed state. And it was interesting a few years ago when I used to go running, and I remember I had like 5 Pro Plus or something, which is about 250 ml caffeine. And I was just about to go for a run and thought, oh my God, I forgot to do something. So I was doing something in the kitchen, and I started to get this coming up effect of the caffeine. So it was hitting me and my heart was starting to beat. And I noticed the really weird thing. I was in a really good place. My life was fine and beautiful. Everything was good. And I started just having all these memories of being bullied and feeling like, if I go outside, what if people bully me? And I was like, this is so weird, because I'd gone through all that. It was past, and I sat down and meditated on that. I thought, why would this be happening? What I realized was that when my body was being forced into a sympathetic nerve state by the caffeine, it was actually associating every memory that I had when I used to be in that state a lot, which was being bullied. So when people are hitting the caffeine really hard, what it can do is put them, it puts you into a sympathetic state. And then when you're in that sympathetic state, your mind will go, right, I'm really anxious now, and I don't know why, because it's being forced to. And then it'll go, right, why am I in this state? And it'll start looking for all the emotional reasons why you're in that state. So I'm having that trouble with my, my boss, that must be the reason why. Oh, it must be that thing I've not done with my family. So it's trying to justify why. So you basically, if people are getting anxiety of caffeine, you're forcing yourself to be anxious when you don't need to be.
I'm not a one to say I'm a victim of anxiety, or I'm not one to say I get anxiety. But then when I started realizing, especially in the last week and a bit that I've been off coffee, I've started realizing I was blaming a lot of my problems in my business on Brexit or on a cat that's not turning up. And then when you look at it, it's because really, that's not the reason why. It was me. It starts with me. And this is why I started this podcast. It starts with you. And this is...
Brilliant.
It's there. It's right inside you. It's the power to deal with it. And I think starting this podcast has been a little bit of therapy for myself, I think. Because I've self-realized a lot of things over the last couple of months of doing this podcast. Hey, listen, Paul, we can talk for hours. I think we should do another podcast.
That'd be amazing. Yeah.
And go really deeper if you want to, or even I could pose some questions to yourself from the audience or something and see if they've got something to talk about.
Definitely.
As well.
So. Yeah. It's all about like going with inside yourself to the Pandora's box. That's where I spend most of my work. And also how to communicate with other people. So there's the four main styles. And on my YouTube channel, I do a lot of this sort of stuff. Like you've got
plug it. Plug away your YouTube channel. Plug your YouTube channel. I forgot you had a YouTube channel. I've been meaning to watch that. I've been started your book. You sent me a copy of your book, and I started reading it. And I was like, flipping hell, this is what I've been looking forward to reading.
Oh, cool. Glad you like it.
So yeah, that's. Is your book on sale, by the way? Is it still on sale? Is it still from the publisher, or have you got a special order?
It's on Amazon now, and it's called The Hidden Mask of Your Mind, which basically, in a nutshell, is like when Pandora's box takes over and we can't cope, the mind protects itself by creating a mask. It's also known as ego defense mechanisms. I think the ego gets demonized a lot, and it's not. The ego actually is a negotiator within the mind, but when it can't negotiate because it's not been listened to, it will protect. So that's when we create masks. It could be arrogance or money or power or victim or whatever like that. So for anybody listening as well, have a look at ego defense mechanisms on Wikipedia and look at the ego and superego. It's beautiful as the ego, it's wonderful. But a lot of people blame it, which is again victim. It's not so much. It's like when we can't cope. You know, say if you walk up to a person and they're just plain blunt rude to you and they're just so disrespectful, which is now again same as my dad. It's like, look, he couldn't cope.
Yeah.
He couldn't cope. So if I blame him, I'm saying I can't cope, which is exasperating the problem. So when we start to negotiate with ourselves and stand, we can move forward. And that's what the book's all about. It's about learning how to take responsibility and understanding ourselves. But the YouTube channel, with tons of free videos on there. So there's Mind Islands Coaching. And goes into a lot of social games, and you can see a lot of what it all comes like.
I'll pop the link in the description of the podcast, and when I post it up on LinkedIn as well, to your YouTube and to your book as well, so people can have a look at it. But seriously, Paul, thank you very much for your time. I know you've got
absolute pleasure, my friend.
We'll have a me too. Me too. Really am. Because you've blown my mind.
Thank you very much.
You've really opened my mind to a lot of things that I thought I understood, but now that's where I love the whole Dunning-Kruger thing. That's you don't realize until you realize how much you are missing in your knowledge. So it's
we know nothing. As a human race, we know nothing at all.
Quick before you go, there was I can't remember who it was. I think it was a physicist. If aliens looked at Earth, they would not see the difference between Einstein and the stupidest person on the planet, because it is minuscule. The difference in intelligence, tiny. Whereas if an alien's looking at Earth, the chances are they've invented light speed and and on all these things. So it's extraordinary how much the most intelligent person knows, and we still don't know 99.9% of what is around us and ourselves. It's fascinating, the whole thing behind it. So anyway, Paul, I'm gonna let you go, buddy. Take it easy. I will speak soon. All right, mate.
Thank you so much for your time. I really appreciate it. And for anybody listening, go out there and just enjoy life as much as you can by learning as much as you can about yourself.
Awesome. Cheers, buddy. Bye.
All right, man. Thank you. Bye-bye.
So I hope you really enjoyed that. And I highly recommend to get a copy of his book as well, The Hidden Mask of Your Mind, by obviously Paul Ryder, and have a good read of it. I'm about halfway through in it, and it's not just reaffirmed certain things I had an idea about, but also educated me in areas about my own self. And as we said in the podcast, we talked about how we met, one post I put out there about giving up coffee, but we talked about more about these things, about taking control of your life. And this is what this podcast is about. It starts with you. And I never thought I'd be speaking to someone like Paul so early on in my podcast. Kind of, is that podcast career? I don't know. So I'm absolutely blown away. And he has taken me on a journey now of this self-discovery that, you know, I'm looking at myself and I'm thinking, yeah, there's certain elements of my personality or certain elements of me feeling slightly victim or slave even to the thoughts I have or the things I have. That sounds really deep, actually. It's not as deep as you think. It's just, you know, things like giving up alcohol, giving up coffee, giving up sugar, giving up doing stuff to improve you, your mindset and your health. And you need to kind of start somewhere. And listening to Paul talk about these things, it was fantastic. So truly enjoyed it. So this is us for today, and thank you for listening to It Starts With Your podcast with me, Mark Hopkins. Until next time, take care. Bye-bye.